second hour underway by getting on board the telephone line and welcoming in our friend Sean McAdam of Mass Live, who joins us from beautiful Fort Myers, Florida. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are things in the Sunshine State today?
Well, the weather is great. A little warmer today than yesterday. Yesterday was, I know people don't want to hear this, but on the decidedly cool side, had to break out the pullovers and sweatshirts yesterday morning, but today was a little more seasonal, and we're underway with spring training.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers officially reported today, but it sounds like a lot of them were there early.
Yeah, that's become the pattern, I think, across the game, Rich, in the last few years, is that, you know, you used to have guys coming in on the report day or maybe the night before or at most a day or two. Now you probably have, I don't know, two-thirds of the 40-man roster well in advance of position players' deadline to report. You have pitchers and catchers here in late January and early February. So, you know, the trend with players staying in shape and remaining in shape and paying a lot of attention to preparation all winter has kind of led to, you know, guys showing up earlier and earlier and ready to go. And that's the case again here this year.
Well, it has been an interesting and for a lot of fans, far too quiet offseason for the Red Sox. Much of the speculation lately seems to involve them looking for some outfield depth. What are you hearing?
Yeah, they certainly could use another particularly right-handed hitting outfielder. They were in for a while on Jorge Soler, who ended up signing with the Giants the other day. But by the time it had really got down to decision time, the Red Sox were not much of a factor for him. So he was evidently a little too pricey for them. There are some guys that are still out there, including old friend Adam Duvall, who remains at least the possibility to return. They could use, you know, when you look at the outfield alignment, you don't have much in the way of right-handed hitting guys. You do have Tyler O'Neill, who they acquired from St. Louis back in earlier in the winter, and you've got Rob Refsnyder, but he's more of a fifth outfield type. So they could use a righty bat and one to hit between Devers and Costas in the lineup, but haven't found that guy yet and don't seem to be too inclined to spend a lot of money to do it.
And it sounds like if they could find a pitcher that fits within their budgetary plan right now, they bring a guy in, but that's not likely to be a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery. Are they prepared to go with what they have? And if so, what would the rotation look like?
Yeah, I mean, there have been opportunities when, you know, when you look at Jordan Montgomery, a guy who has his wife committed to a medical residency in Boston for the next couple of years, you would think that would give the Red Sox a huge leg up when it came to leverage and negotiations, but they've shown little indication that they're going to spend $20 million plus on a starter for multiple years. I think it's far more likely they get a lower-end free agent, a Michael Lorenzen, you know, a Hyun-Jun Ryu, who has missed the last couple of years, or at least the last year or so, for some injuries, and then came back toward the end of last year. That's the guy I think Ryu would make a lot of sense here. He's 37 and, you know, maybe not the most durable, but for a low guarantee with some incentives, it would be nice to have a left-hander in their rotation, which they currently lack. You ask, what does that rotation look like? Well, it looks a whole lot like last year if you just swap out Lucas Giolito for Chris Sale, because that's the only significant addition they've made. They traded Sale, of course, and signed Giolito as a free agent. Other than that, it's some pretty familiar names. Guys like Bayo and Pavetta and Crawford and Hauk and Whitlock and, you know, maybe one or two others. Some talk about Josh Winkowski perhaps being a candidate for the rotation after he pitched far better in the bullpen last year. They might want to take a look at getting him back stretched out. But if this is the group that they're going to start the season with, they had better hope that there's a lot of internal improvement, because there haven't been many in the way of external additions.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, a high-priced closer seems like a luxury for a team that probably won't be competing for anything this year. So are they serious about entertaining offers for Kenley Jansen?
I think they are, Rich, but as we wrote last night with colleague Chris Smith, it certainly seems as if they will only move Jansen if they can do it without having to take back any of his salary. Mm. That's their position. This is a pretty valuable guy, particularly if you're a contending team. If you are in the market for a closer to help you and get to October and then thrive in October, Jansen has that track record. But their position is, we're not going to give him away, and we're not going to make it any easier by taking any of the salary off his hands, off your hands. So if you want him, take the $16 million and give us a decent prospect in return. Otherwise, we can hold on to him and maybe market him at the deadline when teams are particularly desperate.
And there have been rumors out there about teams expressing interest in Jarren Duran. Would they move him, and would they, again, be looking for prospects if they did?
Yeah, it's unclear what they would be seeking in exchange for Duran. I think they'd look at a crowded, left-handed, heavy outfield with Masataka Yoshida, who's going to get a lot of DH time, but will still play some outfield. He's left-handed. You know, you've got Abreu, you've got Roman Anthony on the way as another left-handed hitting guy. So I guess they see Duran as a little bit of a redundancy, although his athleticism is not something that the Red Sox have a lot of, and they should think twice about that. But it seems like there's very little that they won't at least entertain some offers for, and Duran is among them. San Diego, as you mentioned, was a team that seemed particularly interested. They've since added a couple of outfielders in the last couple of days. Whether that takes them out of the Duran talks, we don't know, or even what they're looking for. I think it's more a matter of value. They may look at Duran and the year he had last year as someone whose value might have peaked, and that they have some questions going forward about whether he can do that on an every year basis. And now would be the time to cash out on him, given that they do have some other left-handed hitting outfielders, but nothing close to report there on trade talks.
Are they pretty confident after his surprising performance last season that Willier Abreu can be pretty close to an everyday guy?
They seem to be counting on that as someone who can play right field for them. We all know the challenges that and the demands that come with playing that position at Fenway Park. Alex Verdugo learned to do it very well last year, got nominated as a Gold Glove finalist, but he, of course, is gone now, having been dealt to the Yankees. I think you're going to see some others get a look in right field. Tyler O'Neill is a two-time Gold Glove winner. He's a pretty good defender in the outfield, and he could get some time there. But, yeah, I think the expectation is that that's Abreu's job to lose, at least as we get spring training underway. A lot can change between now and the end of March when it's time for opening day.
How important in their quest to get 81 wins is the play of Trevor Story bouncing back and being some semblance of the guy they traded for?
Yeah, they'd love to see an offensive resurgence for him. It may be that Story is the guy that can provide that righty bat in between the two lefties of Devers and Casas. We have not seen a healthy Trevor Story here, not fully healthy anyway. He arrived with that issue with the elbow for 22 and, you know, had some other injuries limit him to 90-something games. And then having had the surgery about 13 months ago on the elbow, he didn't return until almost mid-August and was not anywhere near the hitter that he'd been in Colorado. He hit just over 200, didn't hit for a lot of power, and had trouble catching up to the fastball. I suppose, you know, when you look at somebody that, you know, kind of had to hop on the bus when it was going full speed in August, he didn't have the kind of ramp up and game rhythm that you would like to be able to go attack major league hitters. The hope is with a fully repaired elbow and a full off season to prepare, he can get back to being the guy who can hit 25 to 30 home runs, knock in 80 to 90, and have an OPS of, you know, over 800. We certainly didn't see that in the last 6 weeks last year, but as I said, extenuating circumstances.
Sean, are fans right to be optimistic that Theo Epstein can be some sort of John Henry whisperer and convince him to spend a little more money on this franchise?
Well, I think that's part of the hope. At the very least, it can't be a bad thing for Craig Breslow to have Theo Epstein to lean on and get counsel from. He's obviously been a terrific major league executive with 3 World Series titles, all of them with teams that have gone 86 or more years without winning. So that marks him as special right there. And he does know the lay of the land here. He spent, however many 8 years as the general manager here. He knows the dynamics of ownership and how the front office and upper management operate. So he could be that conduit between Breslow and John Henry. He has the cachet to go speak to John Henry in a way that probably Breslow has not yet earned. And along the way, offer counsel to Breslow about how to operate and how to succeed as a relatively inexperienced executive. How much time Theo is going to be spending on the Red Sox themselves, we're not sure. He is in this because he wants to get multi-sport exposure as a preparation for one day being an owner himself. But as I said, if you gave Craig Breslow or anybody else for that matter the option, do you or do you not want Theo Epstein around to provide some advice and steer things a little bit, I don't know that there's an executive in the game who would say no to that opportunity.
Sean, is it an awkward situation with Alex Cora in the last year of his contract? And is there any timeline for a decision on his future?
It doesn't seem like it's anything that Craig Breslow believes he has to address in the near term. There have been managers who go into their final year of a deal. Aaron Boone is going through the same thing in New York, although obviously, even though a disappointing 82 and 80 season is not as bad as 2 last place finishes as Alex Cora is dealing with. I thought it was interesting that when somebody said, do you want to be back, meaning in 2025 as the Red Sox manager, to me that was kind of, an underhand softball toss to which you respond, yes, this is the place I want to be. I hope we can work something out, but there's plenty of time. Instead, we got, I don't want to talk about that, which, frankly, I was kind of shocked.
Mm.
I don't think he's trying to make things difficult for the team, but his unwillingness to commit to wanting to remain the manager beyond 2024 was highly surprising in my mind. We know that Craig Counsell has changed the landscape for managers who have the ability to look around when it's got a 5-year, $40 million deal with the Cubs, who fired a manager they had to make room for him. If you're Alex Cora, you're probably seeing dollar signs with that move. But I think you need to be careful to not burn bridges in the process.
Very interesting piece you posted earlier today at MassLive.com on the negotiations between the Red Sox, led by player rep Nick Pivetta, and Netflix about this this reality series, which unfortunately I'm disappointed will not be called Hard Sox.
if only they had listened to you.
Yes, yes.
That's creative input. We talked to Pivetta today. He is, for those who don't know, the player rep for the Red Sox, and thus he was kind of the point person for the players, soliciting their input, asking what they were worried about, what answers they wanted. And what he said made some sense. He said, I think there was you know, a fear on the part of some players that this is going to turn into a gotcha thing where, you know, the production team is looking to stir up controversy or provoke a little unrest in the clubhouse on a team that isn't doing well. And they were given some assurance that that was not going to be the approach here, that it was supposed to, you know, be a behind-the-curtain look at what goes into a long baseball season, which can last, you know, 7.5 months, even if you don't make the postseason. And they want to be able to show that dynamic and the relationship between the players and the relationship between the players and management and all of that. And it could be revealing and entertaining, but they first wanted some assurance that they weren't going to be embarrassed by this and that they weren't out to create controversy where none existed.
Check out Sean's great work at masslive.com. Sean, appreciate you making some time for us today. You stay warm when those chill winds blow, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
I'll be thinking of you when I have to put on a long sleeve shirt, Rich, okay?
I appreciate that. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean McAdam, masslive.com, talking Sox with us here on Downtown.